the Eternity Podcast Network. eternitypodcasts.com.au.
Hello, I'm Jenny Salt, and welcome to Salt, a place where we'll enter into the lives of people and discover heartwarming, sometimes challenging, yet always distinctive gospel stories.
I was at a function one night, and it was around the time of the bed controversy. And I was chatting to a Christian politician, actually, and I was talking about what I wanted to do in politics, and he turned to me and said, "Megan, this is the place where good hearts go to die."
Have you ever watched politicians on the news or listened to them on the radio and wondered who would ever want to be involved in all that? Well, my guest today is one such person who has worked in the bear pit of state politics and has lived to tell the tale, Megan Skinner. Welcome, Megan, to Salt. Lovely to have you here.
Thank you.
Now, we're going to hear about some of your experiences in the area of state politics. But before we go there, it'd be lovely to hear about where you grew up and your childhood. Mm. Where did you grow up?
So I grew up out in Western Sydney, so in a little suburb called Erskine Park, which is kind of near Mount Druitt.
Okay, so many people know Mount Druitt.
Yes.
You're a true Westie.
I am a true Westie, born and bred.
Yes.
I was born in Westmead, went to school there, got my first job in Western Sydney, started working and doing all my community work in Western Sydney.
A proud Westie?
Yeah, I am. Yeah, definitely. I like to break the stereotype of the traditional Westie, but also make people feel uncomfortable about the fact that they have those stereotypes about Western Sydney.
Yes. Yeah. So you grew up near Mount Druitt in Erskine Park. Do you have any particular memories as a little girl about living in Erskine Park?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So this is right near where the new Western Sydney Airport's going. And so every day when we'd get home, we'd have to call the ranger because we had a herd of cows in our front yard. Or we'd often have to call also the ranger to come and collect kangaroos off the road on the way to school. Yeah.
Wow. So and that wouldn't happen. Rural. That wouldn't happen.
No. There's a nice big industrial centre that's stopped all that. Yeah.
And so you went to school there in primary school. What primary school did you go to?
I went to a little community school called Mamre Christian College at the time. It's an Anglican school now.
Okay.
And I went there from kindergarten up until year 10.
Okay. Yeah. So you went to a Christian school. Mm. Is that because your family were Christians?
Yeah. So, my family are Christians. And they come from families that are also Christians as well.
So your mum and dad, both Christians.
Yeah.
So did you become a Christian through them?
No, not really. I did hear a bit about the Christian school. It was because it was a local Christian school, it was open to all of the public. I heard a bit, but not heaps outside of chapel. Yeah. Mostly through my grandma, actually. She was the one who would look after me in the afternoons, and she told me, all about Jesus and about what it was to be a Christian. Yeah.
What are your memories of spending time with your grandmother?
Before my grandfather passed away, they take me up to Warragamba Dam, which is very far west of Sydney, and he used to make me collect rocks and then told me that if I put the rocks in a bucket of water that they would go soft. I found these rocks about a year ago and they're still not soft despite soaking for 20 years.
Why did your granddad tell you to do that?
Oh, that was him.
He just
was
to keep you busy?
Yeah, he was a larrikin. Anything that he could stitch me up on, he would, yeah.
And you heard the gospel from your grandmother?
Yeah.
Do you remember specifically what she told you?
Yeah, she actually told me that I was an angry little girl and that I was too stubborn and too independent and that I needed to know what grace was and I needed it. So, but it worked, and she told me about God's grace and why that was different. And, even as a little feisty six-year-old, it really, struck true to me. Yeah.
So at the age of six, you became a Christian.
Yeah, in as much as a six-year-old understood.
Yes.
I'd say yes.
And did that have an impact in terms of going to a Christian school and, you know, spending time with friends?
In primary school, not really. Even though it was a little Christian school, it was still a Western Sydney school. And so the kids in my year group were pretty rough. So I nearly got hit by a chair by one of the kids I sat next to when I was in kindergarten. And
well, you nearly got hit by a chair. Is that because you dodged?
So, in primary school, not really. I was also bullied a lot in primary school. And I think most of that came down to the fact that I was, you know, the girl who had it all together, as my friends saw it. And so, yeah, I got bullied quite a lot between years 4 to year 7. So, yeah, at that time I didn't really feel like I really showed them what it was like to be a Christian because I was just too scared of them. I sort of just hid a lot. Yeah.
Did your mum and dad know about being bullied at school?
I think a little bit. I don't think I was always kind of I'll do it myself and I'll fix it myself. And so I just stayed pretty silent. I'm sure my mum knew a little bit, but I didn't want to worry her.
So you went to the local Christian school and did you have a local church that you went to as a family?
Yeah, we grew up in a very small little independent Baptist church. Most people wouldn't know what that meant, but very, very conservative, came out of an American missionary movement. And so that was a tiny little church that we went to, but it was lovely. Some of my closest friends at church were 80-year-old women. And so I had a big family, at church, even though I didn't have any people my own age. Yeah.
And do you have memories about what you learnt when you were going to this little church?
Yes, I learnt, I'm pretty sure I learnt every Bible story by the time I was 10 at that church. They were very good in going through the Bible. I think mostly I just, learned from these older women. A few of them are from Ireland, and so I learned a lot about Northern Irish politics by the time I was, 12 or 13. Yeah. <That's true.
laughs> So you're going to the little, the Christian school, the church. Yeah. Sounds like things were going along really nicely. Was there any bumps in the road for you at this time?
Yeah. So when I was about 6 and 7, I started to realize that, things weren't potentially all that great at home. I didn't really have any words around that, but just that dad would suddenly not come home or he'd be gone for a few weeks on end. And then I started to get a few phone calls at the home phone and, realized that my dad wasn't who he was saying that he was. And that went on for from when I was 6 to when I was 13 that I started to realize that things weren't okay at home.
And at the age of 6, it's hard to really understand what's going on. But when you say that you were realizing that your dad wasn't all that he said he was, what did he say he was, and what was it that he how different was he to what he said he was?
Yeah, well, he was, as most men are who are well-educated, was, a leader in the church. So he was a deacon there and, he had trained in finance, so he would give a lot of advice about that. But at home, we were doing it tough and finances were getting tighter and, he was... always at church on Sunday, but then wouldn't be at home any other night of the week. Yeah, and there just seemed to be a bit of a division between what was, what I saw him when we were in public and what actually was happening at home. Yeah.
And you said you took a few phone calls. What were those phone calls?
Yeah. A few of them were other women who were calling at home. Somehow had gotten his number, threatening to out him, wanting mum to be put on the phone so that they could tell her. Yeah, and then just a few financial calls as well. Things were obviously not going well and a few people threatening money and demanding money from him.
Yeah. Right. That's a lot to handle at such a young age.
Yeah.
And do you have siblings? Do you have brothers or sisters?
Yeah, I have an older sister. Yeah.
Okay. Was she at home when you were?
Yeah, she was at home. She was in high school, but she was also just kicking off uni when this was all happening. So she was at home, but also probably not as much as I was. Mm. Yeah.
So how did this all pan out in terms of your mum and your dad and what your dad was doing and he living kind of a double life?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, well, it all sort of culminated when I was in year eight. I was 13. Mum picked me up from school one day and I could just tell that something was different. And, yeah, sure enough, he had left a note and had packed up all his stuff and, yeah, he was gone. And that was the last time we saw him.
Did you get to say goodbye? No. That was just the note that he left?
Yeah, no, it was like any normal morning. I used to leave little pins under his tire wheels and stuff to give him a flat tire so that he'd stay at home and things like that. And I remember that morning, it was like any other morning, I tried to stop him from leaving. And then not because I thought anything was wrong, just because I wanted him to stay longer. Mm. And yeah, I would do what I always did, which I'd wake up really early and shut the door for him. And I watched him drive away just like any other day.
Mm.
Yeah, but he didn't
come. And that was it.
Yeah.
And how did your mum go with that? Do you remember how your mum coped with her husband leaving?
Like, obviously she was devastated, but I think within a couple of days, both of us came to, you know, said independently of each other and then came together and said it, that the first thing we felt was relief, that it was finally out in the open. We didn't have to pretend anymore. Mm. Now everybody saw it. We didn't have to keep on protecting this image of what was actually, yeah, going on. Mm.
Mm. And what was the impact, given that your dad was a deacon in the church and was giving advice to people about money and so on, what was the impact for you as a Christian seeing this kind of a double life that your dad was living?
Yeah.
What did that do for you as a Christian?
Yeah. It made me think that being a Christian was all about a set of rules and you either lived up to them or you didn't, and that you tried as hard as you could. And then when life got messy and when things weren't black and white anymore, then there was no point. You would just have to walk away from being a Christian, which is what I saw my dad did. Like, he didn't just leave us. He left everything, left the church, left all his friends at church. Yeah. So Christianity and God wasn't in the mess of life.
Mm.
It was just be a good person or you're not a Christian.
Mm. Mm. And yet your mum didn't do that as a Christian.
No, not at all. Mum had been brought up by, the grandma and grandpa that used to look after me, and they had really showed her what it meant to have a really deep and true understanding of who God was and how much he loves us. Mm. And although I know she struggled walking into church and has struggled walking into church since, she never let go of that. Mm. I really do admire her because I can't imagine the shame that she feels. Yeah.
And did you continue going to that same church where your dad had been the deacon?
Yeah, we did. In some ways, we considered, we were considering selling our house because we needed more money. We're going to move areas just to save money. And my mum actually got really sick. So she got diagnosed with a stage 4 melanoma about a month after my dad left. And so it kind of forced us to stay in the same place too, because we couldn't even think about selling or moving churches or anything like that when mum was so sick. So we ended up staying at that church and they loved us. And, we had meals every night for a year and we had people looking after us nonstop for, that whole year.
I mean, that is huge for a 13-year-old to deal with a dad who'd walked out.
Mm.
And a mum with a stage 4 cancer diagnosis, and yet the church family rallied around.
Mm.
When you look back on that 13-year-old Megan, what do you think?
Yeah. It doesn't feel real in some ways that much can happen in the space of 3 months. But at the time, there was no – I wasn't angry. I wasn't – I was so at – peace with what had happened, not because any of it was right, but just that I also at that time I really heard about the love of God, and I heard about his son who had entered into this mess of life, that he could have left us where we were in this awful world, but he didn't. He sent his son into this broken world. Yeah, and it was the first time I'd ever really understood what it meant that Jesus would enter into something so messy, and what it meant that I didn't have to have that be my future as well.
If you're enjoying our chat today, you might also like to subscribe to SMBC's Principles Hour podcast. You know, this is one of the highlights of my week at SMBC. It's the main chapel service of the week, and it's where expository, Christ-centered preaching is modelled by SMBC lecturers and guest speakers. And on most weeks, I'll also bring you a 5-minute salt spot as part of that chapel service. Head to the resources section of the website at smbc.edu.au.
Yeah, it definitely changed me, absolutely. I had to grow up overnight, and I had to, you know, help mum get dinner on the table, and I had to look after her when she was going through her treatment and all that. But, I wouldn't change any of it.
Mm. How did you hear about the fact that God in the flesh entered into this messy world?
Yeah, so I actually went up to a conference up at Katoomba Christian Convention. It was a young adults conference called Kick Now. And, yeah, it was there that I heard that. It was the first time I had really heard that message of grace. I had heard it a bit from my grandma, but it hadn't really hit me yet. It was the first time that I had also heard that it wasn't about what I did anymore. It wasn't about what I could achieve or how good I was. It was just about Jesus and what he had done.
Because you actually you're a good student. You worked hard and you were good at achieving.
Yes.
So in high school, you did well?
Yeah. I think it made me, which is not necessarily a good thing, it made me more determined to do well. I did not want to be that single parent kid from Western Sydney who dropped out. A few of my friends got pregnant by year 10. I didn't want to be that. And so I just kept working and working and working and working. And whilst that kept me out of a bad scene, that probably also isn't a great character trait either, that I'm an overachiever. But I kept on working and then got into the uni I wanted, got a job that I wanted straight away.
So we're heading towards your time working kind of behind the scenes, but in politics. When you went to uni, did you choose a degree that would set you up for that trajectory?
Absolutely not. No. I had no intention of being involved in politics whatsoever. Western Sydney is kind of like any region really in Australia, but Western Sydney in particular don't like politicians. No, so definitely not.
So you didn't want to be a politician. You didn't want to have anything to do with politicians.
No, not at all. And I went to a high school in St. Mary's, the suburb, so St. Mary's Senior High. And I had an incredible English teacher who told me I should go into communications. And at the same time, I met a politician called Tanya Davies, who was my local member. And those things happened within a few weeks of each other. And I started to realize that maybe I should consider going into communications degree. I really loved writing. I really loved reading and researching and thinking about society. And so I decided to do that with all intents and purposes of going into media or into journalism or something like that.
So, Megan, you met Tanya, or at least you saw her, when you were in high school. Mm. What were your first impressions, given that you weren't really set on politicians or politics? What were your first impressions of Tanya?
Yeah, well, I had never met a politician at all, so I had absolutely no idea what she did. I just knew that she was there handing out the awards at the ceremony, which is how most people meet their first politician. I actually talked to her afterwards because I received an award, and she talked to me after the ceremony. And she had been a physiotherapist, and that's what I wanted to do. And so she actually told me to not go into physiotherapy, but I should consider helping people instead. And I was like, oh, surely physio, you can do that. And she encouraged me to think about other ways in which I could help people. And so she told me about how she had left physiotherapy and how she had started to think about politics. Yeah, she definitely wasn't trying to tell me to get into politics by any stretch. But
and when you saw her later, did she remember that interaction?
Yeah, I had to remind her the first time. But she definitely knew who I was from that. She forgot that she had told me not to do physiotherapy. I think she was a little bit sorry to all the physiotherapists out there. we kept in contact when I first started in politics when I was 20 again, and then she followed me right through until I got a job with her when I was 25.
That's great. So you're at uni doing a communications degree, thinking about maybe something in the media, but pretty blurry. How did you then move more particularly into the area of politics?
So I started an internship actually with a completely unknown group who were looking into death and dying, which is a sort of weird topic for a 19-year-old to be interested in. But I'd spent every week volunteering in a retirement village that was down the road from my school growing up. And I think as I spent time then, as I spent time working with this group, I was like, oh, there's so much work that needs to be done in the aged care space. There's so much reform that needs to happen. What does it mean to have quality of life versus, actually just sustaining life? And I started looking into that, and I started looking into social policy. And then from there, somebody recommended I do some work with a group called Sydney Alliance, who were all trying to gather the entire community around a form of action. And so I was in Western Sydney, and I was doing work with the local church and the local union and council, and working with community organisations trying to work on the issue of transport in Western Sydney. And that sort of sparked in me this love for trying to make something in society just a little bit better than it was.
Do you think that your experience with your your family, your dad, was that also a part of the picture, do you think, of wanting to make things better and seeing what needs to be done and feeling like there are things that you could do?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think you can go through that much without either falling into despair or wanting to make things slightly better. And like I said, I saw so many of my friends who had just really been destroyed by their circumstances and had no hope at the end of it, had no way of coming out of that. Part of me as a Christian believes that hope at the end of that is Jesus. But there's another part of me that just sees there is real physical needs that people need addressed. There are some people who are in cycles and, family systems that they can't make things better for themselves. They can't get out of that. And so I started working with this group to train up and to encourage and to help other people to actually find their voice and to stand up and sort of had done what I had done, which was make something better out of a situation that was really quite terrible. So I think both of those worked hand in hand in a way. And it just was never a question to me. It was just what I knew that I could do and something that I just felt like I needed to step into.
So you're doing this internship while you're still studying at uni.
Yeah.
And then you finished uni, and did that take you then into state politics? How did you get to the point of working with a member of parliament in state politics?
Yeah, so I was finishing off my uni degree, and I had been accepted to study overseas for a semester in England. And as I was over there, we had to do an internship as part of our university degree. And I was overseas, and I just didn't want to think about it. And a parliamentary internship came up, and I thought, okay, great, then I don't have to find one, put my name down. And the member of parliament they placed me with saw on my resume that I had been studying. I was at Oxford studying there, and she liked the sound of that. And so she asked for me. And so I literally touched down after a very 29-hour flight from London and walked into state parliament for the first time.
Here's a question. Is it even possible to have a deep discussion without descending into chaos? Michael Jensen and Megan Powell Dutoit think so and want to show the rest of us how to do it. With All Due Respect is a podcast that has less aggro and more conversation. Now, Michael and Megan have heaps in common, but lots to divide them too, and they want to talk about all things with conviction. Join them as they talk through the top issues of the day. With all due respect, part of the Eternity Podcast Network, tune in and examine both sides of the coin with all due respect. What are your first memories of walking into State Parliament?
Well, I was desperately late because I was so jet lagged. I had missed my train from Western Sydney, which if you know Western Sydney trains, if you miss one, then that's it for the next hour. So, I was running late. I was very stressed out. But, yeah, I just remember walking in and being – I'd never walked into State Parliament before. I hadn't gone to a school where you'd get taken on parliamentary tours or, you know – where you
do an excursion to Parliament House.
I think we went to Canberra once, but I really don't remember it. Mm. And so I was just, really, I was just like, I just need to get through today and then go to sleep. Yeah.
And what was your role?
So I was working, interning at that point as a research assistant, coming up to the 2015 election at the time.
Okay. Mm. When I think about working with politicians, it really does look a bit like a bear pit. And I often wonder whether they're in it to help others or whether they're in it to promote themselves. Mm. In the years that you were working behind the scenes, and we can get to the more the specifics of working in a with a particular politician. What did you see? Is it kind of the good and the bad and the ugly?
Yeah, definitely. I was working for the National Party at the time, and most of the people, particularly there were these bunch of older men in the National Party. They'd all been politicians for 27, 30 years. My first week of working as the National Party whip's assistant, I spent, 3 days just organizing all their valedictories. So they were all retiring. And I just saw these men and they had all come from rural backgrounds. They had all gone into politics because they had seen their community suffering. They had seen drought. They had seen fires in their areas, and that they wanted to promote their area. They were all advocates for their towns and their villages and for their people who often didn't get a look in Sydney. And that was, my first couple of weeks in politics, just learning about Lismore and Coffs Harbour and what was happening in Broken Hill and meeting people who genuinely cared that those areas had what they needed from government. Yeah.
So that was the good.
Yeah.
What about the bad and the ugly?
Yeah, there's a reason I think I didn't get into politics as a young person, and most of that's because the young people who go into politics are genuinely in it for themselves. Young Liberal, young Labor, young Nats, they've all got a reputation for a reason, and that is to walk into the halls of power and, one day hopefully themselves be an MP. Mm. Yeah, and so I started to rub shoulders with young people from all across Sydney at private schools that I had never even heard of, who had fathers who walked something and did something and achieved something, and I knew none of that. And I felt incredibly out of my depth, for one, but I also started to see also that there were a long line of people who entered politics because that was the done thing. Mm. Or that was, what you needed to do to get a better job or to get more letters behind your name or to get into something else one day as well.
Megan, as you started to get more involved in working with politicians and those involved with politicians, was there a time where you where you felt yourself pulling back thinking, this is definitely not for me, these are not the sort of people I want to work with?
Mm, yeah, absolutely. I was at a function one night, and it was around the time of the Baird controversy, so where Mike Baird had put through the Greyhound and the council amalgamation reform. And I was chatting to a Christian politician, actually, and I was talking about what I wanted to do in politics, and he turned to me and said, Megan, this is the place where good hearts go to die. And I didn't understand at the time what he meant by that. And as I saw this, controversy play out, saw the way in which the Premier at the time, Premier Baird, had been so affected, the people in his office who were Christians who were so affected by that, I just started to realize you can have all the best intentions and you can be really wanting to try and push good things or good reforms, particularly around the Greyhound stuff. But at the end of the day, that you would get chewed up and you could get spat out really quickly if people didn't like what you were trying to say, no matter how good it was. Yeah.
But you did work most recently with Tanya Davies, and that was a very positive experience for you.
Yeah.
Tell us about that, and particularly last year, for those who are listening, they might be familiar with the name Tanya Davies because she was involved in amending the proposed abortion bill in state government. Tell us about working with Tanya and also what it was like working in the context of going against the flow of society in terms of abortion.
We always knew that with something like abortion, that a Christian voice in any capacity, in any way, whatever that looks like, is going to be different in some form to society. And so I think I was quite prepared for that. I wasn't too shocked by that. But yeah, working for Tanya was the first Christian politician I had really worked closely with. And just seeing somebody who it wasn't even a question that they were going to stand up and say something. The political career, the thoughts of the repercussions of standing up against not just society but your own party wasn't even an issue. It was something that she felt, that I felt definitely, that we needed to say something on. And so she did.
Yeah. And it did change the bill.
Yeah.
The fact that she stuck her head, her neck out, and together with people like you and others and Christians who would go to Parliament, state Parliament, and make their voices heard as well, it changed the bill.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. I think a lot of people wanted the bill completely scrapped. But for us from the start, we knew that that wasn't going to be the case. It was about getting a better bill. It was about, like I was saying before, you know, we try to make things better for society. We also, I believe as Christians, we have an opportunity to speak on what we think might actually make something just a little bit better. And so we were able through that, able to achieve a lot around doctors who have conscientious objections, making sure that they're protected, making sure that we've got proper data for the first time around this, putting provisions around sex selection abortions and late-term abortions, all these things which weren't in the original bill and probably, wouldn't have been if it wasn't really, not just for Tanya, there was a team around her, but she really did stand up and get fired for it, like shot.
She
and
did.
Fired for
exactly.
It.
Yeah, yeah. That's exactly right. And, you know, it is a risky thing to stick your neck out, but we ought to be praying for our politicians, Christian politicians, as they do that. You mentioned earlier about politics and government being where good hearts go to die. And yet you saw good hearts that did not die, particularly with the abortion bill. How did you see that playing out?
I think when I first started working for Tanya, I started to see that, you could work as a Christian in politics and not let it affect you in the same way. It was never her world. And I went back into politics with her under the absolute, with the absolute boundary that it wasn't going to be my world again. I wasn't going to let it be everything that I did. But that also, that we did have something important to say and we did have something important to add to the scene. We weren't claiming to be the only voice, but that there needed to be a Christian voice in politics as well. And we didn't know that the abortion bill was coming up. One of the issues with that was that everybody only had a day before it went into Parliament. But there wasn't even a moment of us questioning what we were going to do or say. I saw it come through a couple of hours after she did. And by Monday, we were working on it. And through that time, I was amazed. I had experienced what had happened under Baird with people just attacking him Now we had it the opposite way, where we had thousands of people writing into our office and calling our office, like congratulating her and asking her to keep on going and asking her to keep saying something. And we did have, like, we got a few death threats and all that too. But that number was smaller because those people's voices were represented elsewhere. And there was just this tsunami of support of people so amazed that there was actually finally somebody speaking up on this as well. And so for us, we weren't even, we've worked on campaigns before, but we came out of this one, we weren't exhausted at all. It was, we were so supported and so loved and so cared for and prayed for by people. We had people from all over the country and from people from different sides of the world writing to us and supporting us. And so, yeah, it was amazing to see the difference in those two situations. And it's not always like that when you're a Christian speaking up in politics. And obviously there were some days that particularly the day she received the death threat, which are harder than others. But yeah, I think there was so many people behind us in that.
Megan, you're not working in the area of politics at the moment. Is that something that you think as a Christian you would like to go back into? Yeah. Or is it something that you are very happy to leave to other people?
So I actually am still working a little bit in the area of politics. So Tanya asked me to stay on with her if I could while I was here at college. And so, yeah, I've decided to keep doing some media is obviously my background, so keep doing some writing for her. But yeah, in the future, I'm open to it. I'd prefer not to be a politician. That would be my I would not like to do that. But I do think that there is a real need for Christians in that space, not to form their own political parties, but Christians in all areas, all levels of government, on both sides of politics. Mm. There needs to be people in those spaces. And at the moment, there's really not a lot of voices there.
Mm. Well, we're very grateful for the Christian voices and also for your part that you've played in that. And thank you for sharing something of your childhood and also that beautiful picture of the God who entered into this messy world. Mm. Thank you so much, Megan.
Thank you.
I hope you've enjoyed being part of the conversation with Megan today and, importantly, been encouraged to be salt and light to those around you. We hope you've enjoyed all the stories we've been able to bring you for the second season of Salt. I certainly have. And we hope you'll join us for season 3, where we'll be bringing you more heartwarming, sometimes challenging, yet always extraordinary gospel stories. We'll see you then. Salt is hosted by me, Jenny Salt, and produced by Mark Hadley. Editing by Hadley Inc. For all show notes and more episodes, head to smbc.edu.au/salt. Salt is a Sydney Missionary and Bible College podcast and part of the Eternity Podcast Network, an audio collection showcasing the seriously good news of faith today. Thanks for making Salt possible.